Okay, money and markets. We had quite a rout last Friday. The markets took a nosedive across the board. Stocks, bond, commodities. There was really no good place to be. It looked to me like the markets were anticipating two things. One, they were experiencing rising interest rates, but I also think they were anticipating a turn in the polls away from Clinton, insiders having knowledge of what was coming up. It's another reason I think what's happening to Clinton reflects a loss of support from the top. More on that later when I discuss the election. Fixed income, we saw the long bond got hit a lot. It's down about one third. It's still up almost 12.5% for the year. The long bond ETF, that's quite an extraordinary performance in fixed income, but it's a big cut from where it was 2, 3 weeks ago. The intermediate IEF, the intermediate term Treasury ETF, now up 6.32%, dropping by a less significant amount. The bond aggregate held reasonably well. It's up 5.05%. And the junk ETF, junk bond ETF, still up 11.28%. So that took a drop. Big question now all over the financial markets is the long-term bond bull over? We've been talking about this for two years. And yet bonds have done remarkably well this year as interest rates went negative on about $14 trillion of sovereign bonds. That's central banks buying up every bond in sight. But I think the long-term bull in bonds is over. It's all part of what I talk about with the debt growth model is over. So we're at the point where we can't continue to expand government debt at extraordinary rates. And so whether you describe it from an investor's point of view that the long-term bond bull is over, or from the government point of view that the debt growth model is over, I think the turn has begun. If I'm wrong, it's only a matter of time, so we might as well assume it's begun. The question is how slow or fast? It could be very slow. It could be reasonably fast. There's no way to tell. The central banks are going to do everything they can to make it slow. But I think it has begun, and a lot of it beginning is really getting all the participants to sort of face facts. And you've watched institutional investors be making a variety of plans and changes in anticipation of it. Now that it's over, the question is who's bought up all the debt? When we did our planet debt wrap up, that was the question we asked. Clearly, the central banks have bought a lot, and the pension funds and sovereign wealth funds have bought a lot, but somebody sort of bought up the planet in the bulge of this. And the question is, who is that? All eyes are going to be on the Fed next week. My expectation is that they will not bump interest rates, but will do a lot of jawboning to say that they're going to bump in December. But anything can happen, so let's just see what happens. Equities up 6.69% for the year, so that's sort of a drop of about 2 points. They were up about 8.5%. The week prior, as of the week prior, home builders now almost flat. They're up 0.66%. So that's a big drop for the home builders. And that, if anything, could easily reflect the rise in interest rates, but very much the turn in the polls against Clinton. The Democrats and Clinton are particularly big on home building and mortgage markets and mortgage fraud. So that's they're much more home builder friendly. Europe now flat for the year. It's up 0.24%. Germany still holding at 2%, up 2.08%, and the developed markets ETF up 1.22%. So that's backing off a fair amount from the week before. China holding up 8%, 8.32% on the large caps. The small caps up 2.81%. So the large caps now doing better than the U.S. for the year. Emerging markets up 15.09% as interest rates went up. Emerging markets backed off a fair amount last week, and they could get hit much harder if interest rates, if the Fed raises interest rates, you're going to see China and the emerging markets take a nosedive. The commodities index now up 2.5% for the year. Commodities is a very interesting market this week because we see the German company Bayer, everybody knows Bayer Aspirin, finally pick up Monsanto at a 44% premium. Monsanto has been a victim of their own greed. They've tried to dramatically engineer a dependency on purchased seeds, both domestically and internationally. They've worked very hard to get state legislatures to outlaw farmers saving their own seeds and to force Terminator seeds on the market. It's a very ugly picture. And, you know, that dramatically raised the cost of seeds to farmers. They could afford it when the commodities prices were bubbling. Now that the commodity price bubble has burst, you know, it's basically driving farmers out of business who could stay in business if they were saving and using their own seed. So that the political backlash from sort of that, the business model and the dependency model, and then the political backlash against GMOs has Monsanto running up a lot of both political and legal liability. So a change in control, a change of name implies the same kind of cut and run we noticed on Lockheed and doing with its Department of Defense contracts. I think we're going to see a lot of cut and run name changing and balance sheet churning and liability protection to protect a lot of people from what's going to come out with the debt growth model over. Gold and silver both backing down. Gold now up 23.5% for the year, and silver now up 36.77% for a year. You know, still a phenomenal performance year to date, but obviously a big dive from where they've been. And then oil now down 13%. 3.0, here it comes. Uber launched driverless cars in Pittsburgh. They still have technicians riding around, ready to grab the steering wheel if anything goes wrong. Singapore has a startup, I think that it's pronounced Newtomini, which put 6 cars on the road at the end of August. So Singapore is still out ahead against Uber with one of their startups. I want to talk about the U.S. establishment calcification. There's a great article in The Economist about a year or two ago that said the American aristocracy is calcifying. It was a cover story. And I put it up at Solari, and it really rang the bell on a serious problem we have. When you have an aristocracy that gets rich, or establishment that gets rich on financial fraud and financial coup d'etat, you know, they kind of get stupid, dumb, and happy, and they're good at rigging government contracts and government money. And they're good at, you know, with an extraordinary military capacity and forcing their unipolar vision on the world. But when that unipolar vision fails and the coup d'etat is over, the question is, who's going to lead the United States in a multipolar world? Who's going to be effective at collaborating and competing in that environment? I posted a blog post this week called Keep Calm and Do the Math, and it really responded to two things that were pretty shocking and a very interesting comment on the American establishment. We saw Hillary Clinton last Friday at a Barbra Streisand fundraiser refer to half of Trump's supporters, so presumably approximately 25% of the American people, as deplorable. Now, for someone who has just been highlighted as being guilty of multiple felonies and who we know is responsible for the slaughter of millions of people in places like Haiti and Libya, to refer to hardworking, honest Americans as deplorable, you know, it takes your breath away. And it was surprising even to me, because it was a gaffe that an experienced politician should never, ever make. And the question is, why did it happen? But to me, what it signals is we have watched the American people basically been shut up and overridden by an enormous amount of media shriek-o-meter and disinformation and government promises. I referred to it in my blog post as, let me read it. Our concerns have been smothered over by the media shriek-o-meter and government promises like thick gravy poured on an entree that no one really wants to taste. All the mathematical symbols systems we use to communicate, from market prices to voting booths to official statistics, are manipulated, so we are escalating our cries. It seems to me that Clinton clearly is evidencing the fact that she has not a clue how the money works and how the system works. She it's almost as though she has become a victim of the disinformation. And we're seeing this in a lot of places where literally the establishment has forgotten, can no longer tell the difference between the fiction they've created to sort of cover up what's really going on and reality. And that's a very scary thing. It's a real, really serious symptom of calcification. But Clinton's gaffe was far from the worst. We then have Alan Greenspan announce that crazies are undermining the system. Now, Alan Greenspan just got finished saying that productivity, the drop in productivity growth was what was threatening our retirement obligations, which is insane. Here's a man who more than anybody led the $40 trillion financial coup d'etat. Now over $12 trillion missing from the federal government, the pump and dump of the housing market, government and securities fraud that produced $27 trillion in bailout. And he's saying crazies are undermining the U.S. system after he led a $40 trillion financial coup d'etat. You just say, as I said in the article, I said, you and I could spend a lifetime searching Greenspan's heart and mind at the subatomic particle level and never find a hint of personal responsibility or shame. And so you listen to these folks and you think, well, they could just be insane. But the reality is they have become prisoners of the fiction. And that is really dangerous because, let me just read you the end of the article. What has always been obvious is that Clinton and Greenspan assume that we can't do the math on what is happening. But it is becoming increasingly apparent that rigged market prices, phony government statistics, and hacked voting rolls have lulled them into losing their grip on reality. If you and I can see this, so the entire world can also see this. Time to do the math on how the members of the G20 can make money exploiting our collective insanity, because that is what is coming. So we are really watching, whether you want to call it an establishment calcification or meltdown, that's very serious. The Gallup poll shows trust in the corporate media now at an all-time low. Frankly, I'm amazed anytime it's above zero. A new great article, one of the reasons I'm a Financial Times subscriber is Martin Wolf, I think, is one of the great financial commentators. He has a new article on Financial Times. I put one of his last articles up on the commentary that was public, talking about globalization stalling. Is it stalling? It's interesting. Unfortunately, I think the question is not is it stalling or why is it or not is it stalling or not, because I think centralization is stalling because it's so destroying productivity. That it's stalling the centralization process. But globalization can be decentralized. It can be driven by markets. Sometimes I wish I could get Martin Wolf to watch the Sir James Goldsmith video. But I think the process of globalization is a natural market phenomena, and it's pausing, not stalling. The question of whether we can get it going or not is whether it will be permitted to happen on the decentralization model as opposed to the centralization model. I write a lot more about these issues in the second quarter wrap-up with productivity. Joseph Farrell has agreed in 2 weeks he's going to join me for a discussion on that productivity. I think that will help you grapple with the issues. So let's look at the national election. And before I start to talk about the national election, please, please, please get to your local election board. Get a list of what the elections are. Get involved in the local elections, because I'll tell you, if we can get non-psychopathic people in control of every one of the 3,100 counties in America, then, you know, we will not end up with elections that are this insane. I can't tell you how important your local candidates are, so please take time to dig in and figure out who's running locally and make sure you're supporting the really excellent people. It makes an enormous difference, much more important, in fact, than the presidential campaign. But Clinton is in serious trouble, and it wouldn't surprise me to see her not make it to the election and to have the Democrats put somebody else in. On Friday, as we discussed, she sort of made the gaffe of calling, referring to 25% approximately of the American people as deplorables. And it showed just extraordinary naivete about how the world really works, but also an extraordinary naivete about politics in America, or how to be effective at politics in America. I mean, anybody who's running for president should not make that mistake. That's the mistake of somebody with little experience in politics. But then on Sunday, she left the 9/11 ceremony in New York early and later announced that the doctor had declared on Friday that she had pneumonia. Anyway, the media footage running around the internet and on corporate media of Clinton leaving 9/11, there are real questions about whether it was doctored or real, and I can't tell what the truth is. But the reality is it indicated a significant effort to hurt her brand. And clearly she's going down in the polls as a result of the weekend brouhaha. If you look in deeper, here's my best guess as to what's happening. It looks to me the patterns of her coughing and staff sickness look very much like low-grade biowarfare and physical harassment, electromagnetic harassment of the kind that I dealt with during the litigation. It's all very similar symptoms, very similar physical effects if you look at what she looks like. Now, it could just be hard work and keeping up too brutal of a schedule, but my guess is no, particularly the patterns of staff sickness. My guess is they're being targeted by the deep state. It wouldn't surprise me if the email and foundation scandals as of a week ago were seriously threatening numerous members of the establishment and ongoing operations. And this is really an effort to throw it back onto something which is Clinton specific. It also looks to me, if you look at sort of the factionalization going on around the campaign, you really have the Bilderbergers versus the military factions. It looks like Trump has been progressively making deals on the military intelligence side. And so you literally have the deep state on the military side up against the Bilderbergers. But if you look at what's happening, it looks to me like the Bilderbergers are pulling their support. The New York AG came out to attack the Trump Foundation, and I think that's just to make sure that the Trump folks know they want this whole thing stopped and left alone. If you keep up bringing transparency to what's happening with the emails and foundation, you're going to threaten Soros, you're going to threaten Gates, you're even going to threaten the Rockefeller Foundation, you're going to threaten the whole model of soft revolution and dirty tricks with foundations. So I think there's a real pushback, and the folks who thought they could put Clinton in, you know, this whole idea of having a woman playing the woman's card globally, it's not working. And I think it wouldn't surprise me, given what I'm seeing, that they're ready to give up on it. You had Colin Powell's email hacked, and it was amazing the kind of things he was saying on email. You could see, you know, what happens if you're a member of the establishment at a certain level. You think that you're immune to getting hacked and having this stuff dished out on you. But anyway, in his hack, he criticizes both candidates and described how the Bohemian Grove members are unhappy with both. And he's clearly putting space between the establishment and Clinton. And I think that was the purpose of that. So if you add it all up together, the patterns of what's happening, I think there's been a real shift, and the establishment is a lot less likely to just try and force Clinton on the body politic. So the question is, if they pull the plug on Clinton by, and they really have to do it by October 1, who do they put in? The logical person to put in is Biden, but I doubt that Biden wants to run. And so it'll be very interesting to see who they come up with. Obviously, there's strong support in the Democratic Party for Sanders. I just don't think the establishment is going to go for Sanders. So the question is, they can always move Tim Kaine up, but that I think they'd like somebody with more name recognition. Obviously, there are many people on the internet who are afraid that Obama will somehow be kept in. Certainly, that would be one solution for the Democrats. I just don't think you can do it under the law. I don't think it's going to happen. And I also don't think that Obama wants it.